2 of That 590 Show coming at you right now on the all-new 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM and InsideSTL.com. Matt Berger and Matt Rocchio behind the microphones. John Giamatti Rudolph behind the dials. Joining us right now on the Bellman Automotive phone line is Shane Young from BballBreakdown.com. You can follow him on Twitter at YoungNBA. Shane, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing fine. It's been a fun, wild week of the playoffs so far.
Great. And I would have to say that the wildest game had to have been the way that Houston completely took apart San Antonio in Game 1 in San Antonio. Now, the funny thing is with the Spurs that whenever they win, they're experienced, but when they lose, they look old. Which is it exactly?
I'm looking to be like a fool on this series. I did pick the Spurs in 7. And I think that the problem is that, you're right, they kind of look old on the perimeter. David Lee, Pau Gasol, they can't defend out there in space. I think the problem is that you just don't have as many perimeter defenders. You don't have as many Kawhi clones. You don't have as many clones for Kawhi Leonard as you need. So, I mean, Danny Green, he shot the ball poorly. You have Kawhi out there that can't really carry the entire burden. That's the problem.
And this Houston team, Mike D'Antoni has always been, I wouldn't say a joke of an NBA coach, but I don't think anybody really kind of took him serious as one because what was the old adage is that there is no D in D'Antoni because he never coaches any defense. It's just all offense.
Well, why did he destroy the bliss that was 2007, 2008?
Okay, but his offense was ahead of its time, basically playing positionless basketball when he had Amari Stoudemire and Sean Marion and Steve Nash. Right now, the way he's coaching this Houston Rockets team where they're just raining threes, it seems like it's just going to be too much for San Antonio.
Yeah, see, I think the Spurs can still get something done here because I think the Rockets actually do rely on that, rely on the three-point shot to be falling a little bit too much. I mean, with Golden State, you look at their shooting, and whenever they're having an off night, because, I mean, they only shot, was it 30-something percent, maybe 20% from three last night in Utah or against Utah. But they still shot 60% from two. I don't know if Houston can do that. Like, I think that if the Warriors have a cold night, then they can still, you know, guns blazing, outscore you in the middle just because of their cuts, their back doors, they outsmart you. If you watch Houston against that Oklahoma City team, I mean, they weren't playing that smart of basketball down the stretch of games. I mean, you know, it was kind of just like running the court, jack up some threes, make some terrible defensive plays. They weren't playing very smart. So I think that if Houston just tries to roll three, you know, threes going in and stuff, I think the Spurs can just take advantage of it in some ways and really just play lockdown defense and try to win a couple of games. I think they still have a shot here.
Looking at the other matchup in the Western Conference between the Utah Jazz and the Golden State Warriors, do you give Utah any chance at all even winning a game against Golden State?
I said it today. In order for the Jazz to win a game, they have to keep the pace down to about 90 to 91. If you get the game into, you know, 97 to 100 possessions, you're just making it hard on yourself because you're giving the Golden State, what, 7 to 8 more chances at scoring. And you know, the Warriors score about 1.8 points per possession. That's unreal. I mean, so you just have to bear out the averages there. I pick Warriors in 4 after I revised it from 5. And, you know, if it was the Clippers, may God have mercy on their souls. So we're just glad that it's not the Clippers and we get at least some competitive games in Utah. But I think it'll be 4.
Speaking of the Clippers, what do you think is going to happen to them? Are they going to break the big three up? Is Doc Rivers going to stay as a general manager? What do you think is going to happen with them? Because I think right now the team as currently constructed, I think their window's closed.
Oh, yeah. I think their window is only 2 years, right? I mean, would you say 2014?
Yeah.
Maybe 13?
Right around maybe then. 14. But, I mean, yeah. As great as a point guard as Chris Paul is, yeah. And I know he's got the great numbers, but there's just something about a player of his caliber that's never been to a conference finals.
Oh, yeah. He's only 31. He's already the greatest player to never reach the conference finals, and it's not even a question. I think that if you held a gun to my head, I would say that he's back because he has the Supermax deal. And Blake Griffin, as much as he wants to be like a big-time market guy, I think that he could go anywhere he wants and still do his off-the-court stuff that he loves to do with commercials, advertisement. Like, he loves to be like a big personality. He's a comedian too, you know, on the side.
Yeah.
I think that Blake is going to be gone. And if Blake's gone, I don't know if that's going to determine whether Doc is gone as the coach, because Doc loves Chris Paul. And with Paul signing that $250 million or something deal this summer because he made the All-NBA team, I think Doc will be back. But what needs to happen with the Clippers, head coach Doc is fine. He needs to give up the presidential powers.
I agree.
And bring in somebody that has somewhat any kind of experience. I mean, we saw that with Tom Thibodeau this summer too. He didn't, you know, he doesn't have that experience running the front office. Mike Budenholzer is also a coach president. He's going to give up those powers as president, what was reported by Yahoo Sports today. So, I mean, I think that what you're seeing is the separation of powers needs to happen, because the Clippers have zero quality bench players that can play both sides of the ball, minus Austin Rivers. Austin Rivers is their only two-way bench player, and that's a problem.
Let's talk about right now the greatest story, in my opinion, in professional sports, and that is Isaiah Thomas dropping 53 on the Washington Wizards last night on the birthday of his sister, who was killed in a car accident. She would have been 23 years old yesterday. He's just been tremendous throughout this entire playoffs, and the first two games that they lost to the Chicago Bulls, everybody kept saying, and I was one of them, this is maybe the worst number one seed in the history of the NBA playoffs. Rajon Rondo goes down with an injury, and so far the Celtics haven't lost a game since.
I think, yeah, I mean, first, it's crazy because I didn't even know that it was Chyna Thomas's late sister's birthday until after the fact, after the game happened and everything. So it's crazy that he went out there and dropped 53, 30 of it, 29 of it in the second half or the fourth quarter in overtime. And that's probably more impressive than the 53 altogether. So hats off to Isaiah Thomas. But I think it could be a little bit of both. I think that Boston can still be the worst number one seed in history, although they didn't lose in the first round. I mean, if you look at the way they're starting out these games like they're a six seed. I mean, they're not very impressive in the first 24 minutes of the game. Washington outscoring them, they have a plus 5.4 net rating in the first half. But in the second half, the Celtics are plus 17.9. I mean, it's just a completely outlandish thing what's happening in the discrepancy of both the first half and the second half. And the Wizards, I think their win probability last night, what were they, 13 late in the third?
Yeah.
Something like that. I mean, yeah, their win probability was probably like over 85%. You have to win that game, and that might come back to bite them. But at the same time, I mean, wouldn't you say Boston just took care of business? They did what they had to do. The series does not start until you lose on the road. That hasn't happened yet. Or until you lose at home, rather. And that hasn't happened yet. So I think Boston still has to win one of these games in Washington, because if it comes back 2-2, I'm still picking the Wizards, because of the way they have the best player in the series, in my opinion, the way he plays both sides of the floor, John Wall, the way he had 40 points and 13 assists the other night, he's combining for the most points created in this entire series. I'm still taking the Wizards until they lose at home.
Shane Young joining us right now on the Bellman Automotive phone line. You can follow him on Twitter at YoungNBA. Sticking, though, with the Boston Celtics, I know you're picking the Washington Wizards to beat them in the series, but if your best player, if you're the Boston Celtics and your best player is 5'9", realistically, how far can you go? I mean, I know right now he's going on tremendous emotion, and it's a fantastic story, but eventually that emotion is going to run out.
Yeah, see, they could, like, as we've seen, they're up 2-0 in the second round. They can realistically get to these finals. And, I think Cleveland, what they would do in these finals, as just a quick aside, Cleveland is showing complete disrespect to the Toronto Raptors. Like, there is no reason until Toronto shows that they are capable of winning on the road in the playoffs against a team like Cavs, they do not deserve any respect. And I think the Cavs, what they're doing right now is completely ridiculous, blowing through these teams.
I posed this question a little bit earlier, Shane, when you're talking about the Boston Celtics. which is can they're a number one seed now. Can they ever take that next step with the current roster they have, or with the pieces they have to build on it? Obviously, they have a lot of pieces in the draft. Despite being a very good team, they're gonna most likely have a top three pick.
Mm-hmm.
Are they, in with this year's draft, you know, can Alonzo Ball, will they be able to step up to the Cavaliers in the next couple of years? Or is Boston, even with all those first-round picks, kind of staring down at a pipe dream of being able to compete with the Isaiah Thomas, Al Horford core?
I think you're right. I mean, it's a weird dilemma that they're going to be in, because it's going to be one of the first years that I can remember, maybe you all remember, that Boston's going to have the number one pick, maybe, number one, two, three pick, and they're going to see a talent pool of a lot of point guards up there. They already have a point guard that, not this summer, but next summer, is going to be eligible for a, you know, $150 million deal, $200 million deal. It's going to be crazy. So, I mean, they had to make a decision. Do we draft a power forward or a big guy, someone that can help Al Horford? And if they do that, they'll be skipping on what we call best player available.
Yeah.
Normally in an NBA draft, you pick best player available and you do not care. The 76ers did that like 3 years in a row, ended up being a big guy, but they still did it. Boston's going to be in that situation, and I think that you're right. If they get Lonzo Ball or something like that, not number one, it's going to create a weird dilemma with Isaiah Thomas. Do you pay him or not? Do you let him go? Do you trade Isaiah, as good as he is, just so you can rebuild around another point guard that's maybe more defensive-minded? I don't know the answer to that question, but to answer about can they get over the hump, I don't think they can. I think that you're running to a dream if you think that these young guys can, plus Isaiah and Al Horford, can contend with LeBron's Cavs. LeBron's Cavs own the East for at least another 2 years. I think, you know, maybe 2020 will be the year that he doesn't make the finals. So you're kind of waiting out the king in that sense.
Who do you think is going to be the heir apparent to the Cavaliers in the Eastern Conference?
Oh, that's a good question. With Bradley Beal and John Wall, or Bradley Beal under contract for another 4 years, John Wall will be under contract until 2019, and then, guess what? He made the All-NBA team this year. He'll be eligible for the super-duper max that he's going to get. If you look at the best players on that roster, Gortat might be gone by then, but you know he's not that pivotal. I think it could be Washington. That's one choice. The Milwaukee Bucks. I know everyone loves Giannis Antetokounmpo.
You should see the cheerleading my producer's doing in the studio right now. When I asked you that question, he was mouthing the words Giannis and raising his arms up in a victorious V above his head. He wanted you to say Giannis and the Bucks so bad, and then you crushed his spirit by saying John Wall and Bradley Beal and the Washington Wizards.
I can tell you who it probably won't be. It probably won't be the Toronto Raptors. I mean, I think you have to take the Bucks.
Isn't that kind of amazing, though, when you look at Toronto? They have some great talent on that team. They have Kyle Lowry. They have DeMar DeRozan. They have Serge Ibaka. So why can't, you know, what is it with that team? Maybe Lowry's not that good? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
I don't want to tell you that, because I died on this hill in the NBA this year where I said Kyle Lowry from October to February when he got hurt or, you know, whatever, he was the best guard in the Eastern Conference. Both sides of the ball, real plus minus, whatever metric, he was the best guard. But then he, you know, in the playoffs, it's a different story. He might be the worst in the playoffs. So with Toronto, their payroll is going to be ridiculous. DeMar DeRozan's making the max. Kyle Lowry's going to be a free agent. He's going to want it. He's going to take no less than the max. Serge Ibaka, we know that Ibaka is not what he was, but still, we had no idea how old he is because he's
That's
from
true.
A different country. Yeah, we had no idea. So he could say, I want the max and nothing less. Jonas Valanciunas is making a lot of money. They're either going to have to pay the luxury tax or they're going to have to get rid of somebody. And if you get rid of Kyle Lowry, you're not going to be as good as you are. So I think that's the million-dollar question there, maybe $150 million question. What are the Raptors going to look like next year? I think it's still, your producer needs to cheer some more because the Bucks do have it, and I think the Bucks can win 50 games next year if everyone stays healthy. And with Jabari Parker, that's probably not going to happen, but you hope to see him come back and play 60 games plus next year.
Well, to answer your question, Berger, about the Toronto Raptors, I think, and Shane, back me up on this one if you can, I think we all should have known that the Raptors weren't going to beat – or weren't going to compete with the Cavaliers when Masai Ujiri's trade deadline move to handle LeBron come playoff time was trading for P.J. Tucker. He saw me coming with it. When that's your move, I just don't – I think we should all see it, you know, coming down the road. That's not going to go well. That's not going to be the check – that's not going to be the chess move that puts you in a good place against LeBron.
You're right. P.J. Tucker's fine, but P.J. Tucker is also a very, very, very cheap version of Andre Iguodala, of a you know, DeMar Carroll's their guy that's supposed to be that guy to defend LeBron. So now they have two guys that are trying to be, you know, the knockoff versions of what you need, and it's not going to work.
He's putting on he's putting on skates.
PJ did a fine job. I think maybe he did like a, I would say, C plus to B minus job on Giannis. I wouldn't say he did a masterful job, but he wasn't the worst guy out there. He's probably the best defender against Giannis in that series. So you have to credit that. But LeBron is like Giannis times five in terms of intelligence right now. So that's going to be hard. I think there's only one team. I think there's two teams in the playoffs left. Two teams that have a LeBron container, and that is Iguodala. He can limit LeBron to about 40% shooting, which is probably what you need. And Kawhi Leonard, and they're both in the Western Conference, so that screws the Eastern Conference right there altogether. But Toronto, you said that they brought in PJ Tucker, and that was a bad move. I don't think
it was a bad move. I'm just saying that when that's your one chess move to hold LeBron down later on down the road, we as fans and prognosticators probably should have realized this isn't going to go as well as we're hoping.
Oh yeah, and they could have got their hands on Paul Millsap, who, in my book, it should be fourth or third in Defensive Player of the Year this year. He was the best defensive player on the first best defense in the Eastern Conference. So I think that Paul Millsap was the move there. But guess what? Atlanta did not want to get rid of him. So, I mean, I guess Toronto did what they had to do. But as we're seeing, it's probably going to be a five-game blowout here, a gentleman's sweep in the second round.
And I would maybe throw another defender out there who could probably maybe do a decent job on LeBron. Not the same one that Kawhi and Iggy could do, obviously. But I think Patrick Beverley could probably hold his own against LeBron, too.
Especially if they run like 1-3 pick and roll and he gets switched on to LeBron. I can see him being like a little defensive menace out there. I can see that.
I have one question for you about those Milwaukee Bucks. If they're going to obviously step up, it's not going to be – obviously the growth of Giannis has to be there, but also Jabari Parker and Chris Middleton have to be the wing players that you have to win with now. Do you think, one, that Parker can come back from all the injuries he's had and be that kind of player, and two, do you think Middleton will rebound fully next year from that Achilles injury that really slowed him down?
Oh, yeah, he had a hammy. He had a
hammy, that was it.
Chris is actually my favorite player on that team. I have a weird thing where, like – you know, some teams, the clear-cut best player is not my favorite player to watch. I don't even know. I guess the Rockets. I'm not a big Harden watcher. I don't like watching him play that much. But, Trevor Ariza was my favorite player on that team for quite a bit because he's a former Laker.
I watch Ryan Anderson.
Ryan Anderson.
You're the only person that watches Ryan Anderson. I've never heard anybody say that before. I watch these games because of Ryan Anderson and nobody else. Only Matt Rocchio.
Yeah, Matt Rocchio. Chris Middleton, the way he plays, he's probably the best one of the best two-way shooting guards out there that you can find in the league. He's always in the top 10 of RPM. I love the way he plays. And I think the Bucks were the third, maybe the second, I have to go back and look, maybe the second highest winning percentage after he returned from injury. I mean, he really makes that team click, and I think Jason Kidd. I think that secretly, that's Jason Kidd's favorite player on the roster too. If you locked him in a room and said, "Pick your favorite player on this roster," I don't know if he'd say Jan. I think he'd say Chris Middleton. The way he just gets everything. He just gets it offensively and defensively. But what the Bucks need, in my opinion, this guy hasn't been said, but I love this guy, Thon Maker, aka Thon McCurr. That's how you say his name. He's already starting, and he's like what? 20, maybe 21 years old.
This Bucks team is so loaded with young talent. I tell people, especially here in St. Louis, where, I mean, there are more NBA fans here than what people think. And I tell them, I told people this a couple years ago, if you're looking to get on board with the team, I would get on board with the Golden State Warriors. And now I'm telling people, if you want to get on board with the team, before it was the Minnesota Timberwolves, and I think they could still maybe be good, like you said, maybe a general manager other than Tibbs. But the other team, if you want to get on board with an NBA team right now, may I sell you on the Milwaukee Bucks?
Yeah, Fallon's out here. People don't know this, but when you think of the Bucks, they finished 42-40. That's an average, a mediocre record. But they also shot 47.4% from the field. That was behind only the Warriors, the Spurs, and I think the Cavs. So they were top four field goal percentage. I mean,
it's such a young team too. I mean, just so young. Yeah. The average age on that team couldn't be older than 25.
Yeah, it might be. Whenever I, who just graduated college, is almost at the average age of an NBA team, that's pretty scary stuff.
Shane, thank you so much for your insight this evening, sir. I could talk about the NBA playoffs all night, but we had to get a commercial break, but we appreciate you coming on with us.
Oh, thanks. No problem, guys. Let's hope the Spurs even it up tonight.
Yeah, let's get a series going here, right?
Yeah.
Come on. One of them's got to be a series. Shane Young. Thanks, Shane. Shane Young from bballbreakdown.com. You can follow him on Twitter at YoungNBA. Let's head to that 590 Show Sports Update Desk and Matt Rocchio.
Earlier today, Rob Manfred and Joe Torre had a conference call with the management of both the Boston Red Sox and the Baltimore Orioles and told them that any more throwing between the teams and there will be discipline. Torre also said that Chris Sale may face discipline for throwing behind the back of Orioles third baseman Manny Machado. Well, we'll see what happens tomorrow, because in the bottom of the second inning, Baltimore's pitcher, it was Kevin Guzman, was ejected after he hit Xander Bogaerts with a pitch to lead off the bottom of the second inning. So right off the bat, we'll see if there's any response there. In baseball, tonight's Cardinals game has been postponed. The start for tomorrow's game as well has been pushed back. It was originally a 12:30 start. Now it's going to be a 6:15 first pitch for all you out there with tickets. The Blues will look to stave off elimination on Friday night as they take on the Nashville Predators in Game 5 of that series. Puck drop is set for 7 p.m. In NBA action, Shane was right. The Cleveland Cavaliers continue to disrespect the Toronto Raptors 62-48. The third quarter just tipped off a few moments ago. Again, Cavaliers with a big lead early in that game. We're at the first intermission in Pittsburgh between the Penguins and the Capitals. No change from a little bit earlier in that game. The Penguins leading that game 1-0. The Anaheim Ducks and the Edmonton Oilers get underway a little bit later. I'm Matt Rocchio with your 590 Sports Report.
Thank you very much, Matt Rocchio. Let's take a commercial break, and then coming up on the other side, I want to talk about that woman getting shot by a stray bullet last night when she was at Busch Stadium. Hopefully this is not going to start the trend now where people are going to be like, oh, hey, yeah, you know what, I'm going to fire a gun in the air. Maybe it'll hit somebody at Busch Stadium. You're listening to That 590 Show right here on the all-new 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM and InsideSTL.com.